the ideas, the leaders, the lives that are shaping Denmark and the world. From Blocks Hub in Copenhagen, Denmark, with your co-hosts, Ed Lay and Thomas Molhern, this is Global Denmark.
Hello and welcome to the Global Denmark podcast, where we explore how thought leaders and innovators are working to create a better Denmark and a better world. Today we had the pleasure of sitting down with Jessica Alexander. Jessica is a best-selling author, Danish parenting expert, and has featured in Time magazine, The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and Vanity Fair, to name a few. She also frequently speaks at places like Google and the World Parenting Forum and the Women's Network of the United Nations. In this wide-ranging conversation, we talk about what it means to parent Danishly, simple steps we can all take to improve our parenting, and how to undo aspects of parenting that no longer serve us. Without further ado, we bring you Jessica Alexander.
We are back. I am here as always with my co-host, Mr. Ed Lay. Ed, looking good? How you feeling?
Thank you. I'm flattered. You too.
Thank you, sir. I dressed a little bit down today to kind of match the ambiance.
And I slightly up.
So we're meeting in the middle. And we are here with today's special guest, Miss Jessica Joelle Alexander. Did I pronounce that okay?
Yes, you did. Perfectly.
Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Well, then let's dive right in, shall we? You are obviously co-author of one of the best-selling books on Danish parenting. And Ed and I are very curious, as fathers to daughters, what is the essence of Danish parenting?
The essence of Danish parenting is, if I had to sum it up, I would say common sense. It's based on a lot of common sense that I feel has been lost a little bit in a lot of other cultures. And it's a very simple model that I wrote together with a Danish psychotherapist based on my observations that I saw. I'm married to a Dane.
And, welcome to the club.
Thank you. And just based on my observations of his family and my Danish friends and all the things I felt they were doing differently than other cultures that I had seen. So yes, it's a simple model based on the acronym PARENT.
Okay.
So it's ready. P is for play.
Okay.
A is for authenticity. R is reframing. E is for empathy. N is no ultimatums, and T is for togetherness and hygge, of course.
The bonus.
The bonus, yes.
The happy, okay. Right. Okay, so, I can try to remember that.
That's in a nutshell.
So can we break down each one of those, starting with play? How does that one fit in?
So, okay, one of the first things I noticed that was different in Danish family life, Danish parenting, was this massive focus on play. I remember when I first talked to my husband, before we had kids, and I would ask him, what did you do as a child? Right, I'm American, so what did I used to do? I could give you a list of karate, ballet, piano, all of these things. And his response was, I played. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, but play.
What else did you do? I played, you know, and it was, and this went on and on. And the more I studied it, the more I looked into it, I realized that in Denmark, play is the most important thing a child can engage in, which I think for a lot of Danes seems like a given, right? Almost a no-brainer. But for other cultures, play has almost been eliminated from the upbringing, right? Because we're so much more focused on achieving or activities or programming kids' lives into doing things, measurable things, right? And so what I found in the research was that play is not teaching kids nothing, which is what I think some other cultures think. Play is teaching kids creativity, empathy, negotiation skills, self-control, so many really fundamental things that are important for well-being, and I think more and more important for skills that we need for the future.
Sure.
Jobs,
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know?
I think I've read quite a bit about play myself, and I know that in maximum security prisons in America in particular, the thing that unites all of the people in there is an absence of play in childhood. And it's thought that the opposite of play isn't work, the opposite of play is depression. So I can see how that one features. And I definitely, with my children, my oldest started school at 4 in the UK, and then my youngest was 3 when we moved here. So she's had a Danish upbringing, early childhood, compared to my eldest. And my oldest one just doesn't play as well. Sorry to break that to you, dear, if you're listening 10 years on. She just doesn't play as well as the younger one. So, and I can definitely see how it makes a huge difference.
Right. And another thing that we found in the research was we have rising anxiety in the US, for example. It's a massive problem. You know, we have this anxiety epidemic.
Both adults and children.
Both adults and children, but especially sort of the teens and up. And what when you start to look at it, one of the things that play is teaching is coping mechanisms. So if you look at animals and why do they play, a lot of animals are teaching themselves. You know, they're doing fight and flight, chasing each other. And in all of these things, in testing their own riskiness, right, and testing their own fear, they're also developing coping mechanisms for the fear, right?
Sure.
And they're testing themselves. So they're seeing how far can I push myself, right? It's not something that's organized by the adult, where they're telling you what you have to do, right? It's actually the child that gets to experiment and, you know, try out a lot of these behaviors, which we think are teaching coping mechanisms, which makes you better able to deal with anxiety.
Yeah, you know, I see it all the time that the talented pedagogues who are running the daycares and preschools here in Denmark, they have that ability to stand back and wait, watch, wonder about what's going on without interjecting and kind of making sure that an activity is executed at one level. But it really is kind of this curiosity towards, okay, let's now talk about the process of play after it happened. And that's how the children learn and learn to cope.
Yes, and it's respecting them. It's respecting the child and trusting them. It's trusting
trust.
The child to learn to trust in themselves.
Yeah.
And this is what, I mean, you don't see so much in other cultures, right? First of all, recess has been almost completely eliminated from schools in a lot of places in America.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's completely, I mean, it's a huge thing now. They're trying to bring recess back because there's so much standardized testing. There's so much focus on the grades and the
make recess great again.
Yeah, but it's crazy.
And
but
art
it's,
has
because,
been removed
because
in a lot
what
of
are kids
as
because
well.
They think what are kids learning from play? And what we're finding is that some of the most
it's
beneficial.
Yeah,
it's actually a false dichotomy to say, "Hey, kids, now you've learned. Go take 15 minutes of recess, where you're not learning anything.
Sure,
you're just playing.
Right.
Where actually you're learning different.
It's the most important
context.
Learning,
okay,
I would
well.
Say. I think they're learning some of the most important things. You know, it's innate in a child to want to play. Right?
All animals do it, right?
Yeah. So this was like a massive, this was a big eye-opener for me because I came from this other stance, which was like, why, what's play, you know?
Yeah.
And now I see it as like a hugely beneficial and important aspect.
And what does the data show in terms of kind of the amount of play that can be ideal for stimulating learning growth?
Well, if I look to the Danish model, I mean, I don't have statistics, but I know that it's like considered the most important thing to do, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have the SFOs,
yep,
which is, again, completely foreign.
Oh, my daughter does nothing in SFO.
No?
That's what you hear all the time, right?
Right, yeah. Right, but, you know, it's so much time dedicated to allowing them this free play, right? I think, you know, because in many other countries, parents are completely stressed. The kids have really long school days. I always say, if you can even get in, like, if you can give your child even 20 minutes of free play where you can also be present in their flow rather than controlling every minute of their day is better than nothing, right?
And it's that trust again to kind of let go,
yes,
right, as the parent.
Yes, and believe the fact that they are learning. And again, I think from a Danish perspective, this is hard to even grasp, that this is a problem in other places. But, like, if I speak to my American friends, they can't even fathom how they could find, you know, extra time in their day, because it's like, but Friday is, you know, karate and sure. Tuesday is piano, and yeah. then they have these things. And
right.
because they feel they're being a good parent. You don't sound as good of a parent if you just say, my child plays.
Right.
You sound much better if you culture. Say, well, my child's doing Chinese and yeah. karate, you know.
Yeah. There's a check mark. Exactly. He's on his way to Harvard, and
yes.
here we go.
Yeah. So I kind of joke sometimes. Unfortunately, I almost feel like play will become more important when we can almost measure it in the U.S.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's a result.
Like, my child played and learned. Yeah. Empathy and yeah. negotiation skills.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess that started in prison systems, the measurement of play, the negative of not doing it. But
other consequences, yeah.
But let's move on to authenticity, sort of a buzzword of mm-hmm. the moment. So can we unpack what does authenticity mean?
Well, I'll just say where it sort of originated. It originated when I used to watch Danish movies, and they're fairly different than American movies, you know what I mean?
A lot more depressing.
And they have found more attractive actors.
I mean, I would watch a movie, a Danish movie, and at the end of it, I'd be like, you know what?
Well, my wife, you know, she's Danish, and she sees the preview for a Danish movie. She's like, God damn it, we just need to switch back to Netflix right now. This is like so depressing.
Yeah, so it was the complete opposite, right? In the American movie, you just know it's going to be okay.
I'll be inspired.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know he's going to
survive.
The music lifts you. Guy's going to get the girl.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
all going to be fine.
Yeah.
But so what I started finding was, the research is that actually, surprisingly, when you watch sad or depressing movies, or let's say even more realistic, because let's say some of them are
sure.
just more realistic.
Yeah.
The American movies are the ones that are less realistic.
Sure.
You mean Legally Blonde 2 wasn't
you know?
Realistic?
Oh, my God. So they find that they make you feel happier in a more meaningful way.
Hmm.
So in a more sort of counter-blessings, like, oh, wow, my life's not that bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so this I had been aware of.
Wow.
Even,
so it produces gratitude.
It produces a kind of gratitude. And whereas I noticed when I would watch an American film, sometimes I would leave and feel like, God, my life sucks. Like, I don't have
oh,
that,
right.
you know, I don't have that mansion. That,
oh,
all
right.
That,
oh,
you know?
The comparison culture.
Right? It,
yeah.
it was a strange fit that I wasn't aware of. It was almost under the surface. But then it came back. So this was before children. And then it came back when I had children, because our Danish family was sending us all these books, you know,
right.
children's books. I don't know if, how many Danish children's books you've been...
All of them.
Okay.
When we
so,
have Rasmus Klump,
I mean,
and
you know,
Elefant Oper.
Yeah.
Some of them are like, they're pretty...
Yeah, yeah.
In your face, you
yeah.
know? I was listening sometimes to my husband reading to my daughter, and I'm like, what are you reading?
Well, we don't even look at the ones from before the 60s. They're so racist, I can't even bear to look.
No, but even if it's just like about, you know, sex education or death
right,
or
right.
divorce or stealing or like all of these things, and they're quite
yeah.
heavy and definitely different than the books I had grown up with, right?
Right?
But then it was along the same lines. And what I found was that Danes tend to be a lot more honest with kids
okay.
about life. And that means every part of life. That means the sad parts and the depressing parts and the sexual parts and the death parts. And whereas I think in other cultures, we sometimes tend to mask that
yeah.
because we want to project happiness all the time.
Sure.
But in
like
fact...
Like an American movie.
Yeah, like in an American movie.
So yeah, protecting our child from the ugliness of the world instead of saying that this is a natural part of it.
But the reality is, the more you prepare them for the reality of the world, the
right.
more prepared they are
right.
to deal with it. They don't get shocked by it. Because life isn't a fairy tale.
No.
You know? And it's interesting, one of the comparisons I made was like, the actual fairy tale of Little Mermaid doesn't have a happy ending.
Does it not?
No, she dies, right? She doesn't get the prince, she dies of sadness. And it's a Danish fairy tale, of course, because it's depressing. but you know, it's
no,
interesting
know, yeah,
the way Disney has repackaged it
yeah.
to make it all happy and that she gets the prince and everything. But I read both versions to my daughter, and it was interesting, she actually preferred the sad version.
Okay.
She asked more questions. It was very connecting.
Yeah.
And so this was really eye-opening to me, that this idea of, like, not hiding your emotions, but being honest about everything.
Yeah.
Again, this comes back to trust, I think, that I think Danish parents generally trust their children to be able to handle it in an age-appropriate way.
Yeah.
The motto I use is, I think it's like, if it's part of life, it should be part of education.
I remember the what happened with the giraffe at the zoo.
Yeah, yeah.
It was dissected.
Yeah.
It was uproar around the world that they're exposing children to this. I think that's a great microcosm for, wow, actually this is a part of life. And I remember one of the guys who was working at the zoo, he articulated so beautifully that this is part of nature and we're teaching them the circle of life and these things. And
We've been having to talk about the sort of circle of life with all of the, you know, bombarding with we all need to be vegans or vegetarians or whatever. There's a lot of kind of circle of life conversation needing to be had at the moment, and I think we always, you know, keep coming back to this. There is no way to not have to become authentic because the kids have got so much access to more information.
Right, right. And it's much better they get it from us
for sure
than they get it someplace else. And you know, that was a really eye-opening thing for me, and something I had to really work on about using correct terms for your body.
Yeah.
Or just being more honest about questions. You know, we watch Ramashang in, we live in Italy now, we watch Ramashang a lot. And I remember when my daughter was six and we were watching, have you ever seen Vilvena? Vilvena?
No.
It's this show about these two kids that go out and they save animals.
Oh.
Anyway, and, you know, these two kids went out to go save a bird, right? And, you know, they zoom and they go and they drive to the bird and the woman's there holding the bird, and she's like, "Oh, my friends, sorry, the bird's dead." And it like zooms in on the, it's got like a head wound, and it said, "Why didn't we make it a nice funeral?" You know,
but
this was like for me so super Danish, right?
Yeah,
like this wouldn't happen in America.
Yeah, in the States, little birdie, the bird's just taking a long nap.
Yeah, right.
And you know, let's just make it a nice bed so when it wakes up.
There'd be a thing, wouldn't there? Before in America, it would be. Be aware that in this...
Yes, there will be some death.
There will be some death.
But again, what was interesting about it, apart from me sort of laughing inside about how, wow, this was quite, you know, again, it opened up great conversation with my daughter about head wounds and death and things dying, and that's part of life, you know?
Okay, I see the authenticity there.
Yeah.
I actually did see one, the Maleficent movie, the first one. I don't know, the new one came out, but... I was refreshed that it was actually a portrayal of this grayness of complexity in a character, that both bad and good, and not the typical Disney story.
Right.
That they're actually teaching children actually this gray area of the complexity of human beings. And I think that was refreshing to see authenticity.
Yeah.
And I hope that continues.
Yeah, no, I think it's super important. And another element of the authenticity that we talk about is this idea of praise. So I also felt like I noticed the way Danes were praising kids. It was a lot less bravado, let's say, than I was used to. So, you know, in America, if a kid
Heard a Dane praise anything.
Okay, right? so a kid draws something
like?
In America and they're like, "That's awesome!
Yeah.
You know, you're such a great artist!" Right? Wow, that's amazing! If they've just scribbled something, you know? And I'm like, a Dane would say maybe like...
Must try harder.
I haven't heard that. Well, also, right? But more like, oh, you know, why did you draw that?
Yeah.
Or why did you use those colors? Or what were you thinking when you drew it? So it's much more about like seeing the child and their experience of it and focusing on the work, right?
Yeah.
Rather than the outcome. Of the label of being a great artist kind of thing, you know? And there's a lot of interesting research about how when we label kids talented or gifted, which in America we use the word smart, for example, like 30% more than...
Growth mindset, fixed mindset.
Yeah, right, all that kind of stuff. And so I just feel like that there's much more humility in the praise.
Yeah.
And I would say more honesty.
Yeah.
Right? Because it is more honest. And I think this value of humility is a very positive thing.
Yeah.
And that comes from
it's intertwined with the yendelo, in terms of the humility. Where I do think it can be a bit of an issue is later on in life when these children grow up. It's difficult for Danish bosses to praise their international colleagues because they're looking for that praise because they're from result-oriented culture and praise right. culture. And, you know, without that recognition, it feels like they're valueless. So actually it's that interplay yes. I see later in life where Danish bosses have a real difficult time with recognition
yeah.
of
yeah.
success.
Yeah. That would be the opposite, like cultural training that would be needed for leaders, I think.
Indeed.
You know?
Yeah. So that, yeah, that's
to understand
gone.
The
yeah.
difference, you know?
Yep.
Because we, like we were saying before, you just grow up to do sort of how you were raised.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I was on a leadership team. It was me and all the rest was Danes. And when we were measured by our employees, it was always in terms of the category recognition. My score was off the charts. And it was just because I was an American and it came natural to praise
mm-hmm.
and say, wow, great job, great achievement, you're doing great. And it was so unnatural.
And, you know, and I think in this example, I would say it's a really good place to have these mixes.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, in the book, I'm comparing a lot of the two cultures, right? Because, I mean, I think there's a lot of good things that come from every culture, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes I feel like the ideal thing is to find the nugget of goodness.
Yeah.
And keep it together with the nut, and
yeah.
then we can
yeah.
create something.
You
even
can do heavier praise
yeah.
on the hard work,
yeah.
can't you?
I struggle though with my daughter too, with the question of praise, in terms of, I want to praise everything and
mm-hmm.
boost
mm-hmm.
her up and give her, but I'm also mindful of the Danish way and
yeah.
more of the curious process, and
yeah.
I'm really trying to
imagine how it is for me. I wrote this
yeah,
book.
Exactly,
I'm like
exactly,
always
yeah. overthinking.
Wait a minute, what am I saying here?
yeah, but I think we talk about. Praising kind of the, like if she draws a picture, say, oh, I love when you draw, instead of the result of the process, like this drawing, right? So it's praising.
Yeah, or I love how imaginative you are. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Or I would say one thing Danes are really good at, I feel, is that they're always talking about being able to see the child.
Yeah.
Right? I hear this a lot in schools and, you know, being able to see and hear them, right?
Yeah.
And so there's just this idea of inquiring about what they did instead of giving an assessment.
Yep.
We have the tendency to assess immediately. So a child that has done a drawing might feel like, I'm going to get an assessment now.
Right.
Right? Instead of us just being curious about what they drew.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be an assessment.
No.
You know? And that's also, like, in our culture...
Right.
Normal. We
what are we assessing
right?
for?
Even
yeah.
if a child says, look, Mom, and they're on the playground, instead of like just inquiring about what they're doing, or it looks like you're having fun, we might either tell them to be careful or say, oh, great job. You know, so I think also the thing about inquiring, not having to give praise
yeah.
all the time, right?
That's right.
And then if we praise, they say the process is better than outcome.
Yeah. But I imagine if praise comes... It's few and far between. When you actually get it, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
It means something
yeah.
different.
Yeah, because kids can also hear when it's empty praise.
Yeah, back to that authenticity.
Yeah, that's the authenticity, right? They can hear, they can tell if it's, they just scribble something and it's completely, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So where are we in our acronym? What's R? What's the R?
R is reframing. So this was
yeah,
just something I observed always. It was also observed by my family, with my husband and his family. He had this way... of always turning something negative into something positive. And not in a, like, an American sort of rose-colored glasses, everything is perfect kind of way, but just his way of just subtly turning things around to be more positive. So the classic example I use is, there's no bad weather, there's only bad clothing.
Yeah.
Right? He was like, there's no bad weather, there's just bad clothing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Or we would be, it'd be the end of the holiday, and I said, oh, it's the end of our holiday. And you go,
is that
yeah.
a male Dane thing or an all Dane thing?
I don't know. It's just
I
something
hear
like,
a lot of, this is really bad weather today.
Yeah.
From the Danes
well,
in my life.
they need to work on reframing.
But I feel that there is a general tendency, if you listen to Danes, there tends to be a general tendency of not finding, like I said, not finding the bright side in an exaggerated way.
Right.
But just in a sort of finding the more positive details in a... so, yeah, my other examples, you know, it's the last day of our holiday. And he would say, true, but it's the first day of the rest of our lives. And I'm like, okay, That's okay, true.
That's also true. Factually correct.
That is factually correct. So I just hear a lot of like, it's not heavily negative. Now right. You live here, so maybe you hear a
so
lot.
So it's these
more.
Subtle reframes.
It's subtle reframes.
Towards a broader understanding of
yes.
where you're at?
Yes.
Finding. I also see in that same capacity is, here's where you're wrong about the thing that you just said, regardless of what you said. So because of the Danish taught in the education system to argue and to look at everything and challenge it,
mm-hmm.
there is a fair amount of degree of, here's my statement, and then I'm going to come back at it and just point out where you're wrong in that statement. And if it ends up in a positive reframe, all the better. But I do, there is a lot of that. And I do hear a lot of CEOs who are from different countries that I speak with who have a challenge in situations where they need their Danish employee to just do the thing, where they'll say, can you do the thing? It's a time sensitive thing, and they'll come back with a challenge for it as well. But rather than a reframe.
And what do you think in terms of reframing? Like, how do you changing habits, right? Because if you have a negative thought habit as your kind of your default, how do you work on that neuroscientifically in terms of reframing?
It's a skill.
Okay.
And that's what I find. It's a skill that you can learn and you can train yourself and you can work on it. And I think it has a huge. That chapter is probably the one that changed my life personally
okay.
the most, because it's literally about taking situations that you would normally see in a negative way, and just reworking them. I sometimes do it in my car. If it's a work situation, it's especially helpful with kids. I mean, this is obviously what the chapter ends up focusing more on.
So do you recognize their perspective and say, if they say it's raining, ugh.
No,
you say, that's right, it's raining, or do you say, no, you don't have the right clothes on?
Yeah, no, it's not negating negative information, right? So again, it's authentic, it's honest.
Right.
Sure.
So it's not like, everything is awesome,
Right, right, dismissing their emotions.
Dismissing their emotions, right? So, I would say with kids, the interesting thing is it's more about not focusing on the negative behaviors,
right?
But building up the positive ones. And I find they're really good at this also in Danish schools. I don't know if you've noticed this, but if a child has a difficult time in reading, but they're really good in math, right? Or they're really sweet, I'll notice teachers, they make a big effort to build up what they're good at.
Yeah.
Rather than focusing on what, and helping the class build up what they're good at, and it doesn't have to just be an academic skill. This is the big difference.
Yeah.
It can be who you are as a person.
Yeah.
But he's so sweet. He's so helpful.
Yeah, a great friend.
He's a great friend, right? And this is wonderful, So this helps, this kind of reframing, it's about sort of rewriting the negative storyline into something more positive, because we all have, there's always positive details in
sure.
a negative situation.
Okay, I get it. So it's, you don't dismiss the negative emotion, but you reframe it in an authentic way,
and try to build up the more positive details that are always there.
Okay.
So some of the examples I give, also I find that there's much less use of black and white language.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, when I used to say I hate this, my husband would always say, "Hate's a strong word."
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I dislike it immensely.
Yeah.
Or I love that you love more than me. It's like, okay, I like it. It's always
exactly.
nuances, this black and white language, right? So
yeah.
I feel that there's less use of black and white languages. And so, instead of saying, for example, I hate flying, you would say, I love traveling, or I like traveling, especially when I get off the plane.
Yeah.
Or I'm terrible at cooking. Actually, I'm pretty good at cooking when I can follow a recipe on YouTube.
Yeah, that reframe right there,
I can't stand my mother-in-law. Not sure, that's just an example.
Are you listening?
No, it's not true. I love my mother-in-law.
Freud,
but another way to say it is, I don't always get along with my mother-in-law, but she's really good with the grandkids. So it's exactly the same situation, but it feels completely different.
Yeah.
And all of these studies show that when you learn to reframe, it changes the way you feel.
Sure.
So when you change your words, you change the way you feel. And it's really powerful with kids.
Sure.
Because while I have to work on it because I wasn't raised with this naturally, I know that my kids will grow up to do it a little more naturally.
But it'll also help them, I think, in terms of creating solid friendships and network, because people will gravitate more to the reframed.
Yeah.
You know, it's a framing bias.
Yeah.
In terms of, oh, you've now packaged this information in a way that's authentic, but also not just depressing and
yeah.
negative. Yeah.
It's a good marketing
skill. Yeah, it's the framing bias. Yeah.
No, but another a very important aspect, I think, to the reframing to mention is something I noticed in a lot of other cultures is this tendency to label children. So like, oh, he's so annoying, or he's sneaky, manipulative. You know, we put some heavy labels onto kids, right? Or the terrible twos.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And this was a really interesting observation for me because I really noticed how differently Danes were dealing with their toddlers.
Mm.
For me, there was something going on that was different,
mm.
and I didn't know what it was. It just seemed like there was more kindness, it was going a little more smoothly, there was less craziness. And then I learned you don't say terrible twos, you say trosela,
okay.
which is the boundary pushing age.
Oh.
Okay, yeah.
So it's seen as almost cute, it's healthy.
They're learning how
it's normal.
Yeah.
It's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
So if you call a child terrible, you're going to react differently.
And you're only looking
yeah.
at it from the parental perspective and not in terms of their growth.
Exactly. If you call it, that's what they're supposed to do, it's the boundary pushing, you're going
yeah.
to respond to them differently.
Sure.
So this is, again, another
yeah.
example. It's very powerful, I think, the labels we use
yeah.
for children.
Right.
And to be
yeah.
aware of that, that, I think, is, like, huge. Because so many of us just repeat what our parents said or what we hear in society.
Yeah.
And we throw out these things like terrible twos,
yeah.
like it means nothing,
yeah.
right? So I think the words we use are really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important actually for the world to see how Danes parent, but for the Danes to see how they parent, so that they can go, oh, that's why that works, and that's why I shouldn't step out there. I forget the Danish phrase for it, but something I hear a lot is, you're such a shit kid, from Danish parents
really?
To their kids.
Wow.
I've never heard that.
Yeah.
That's the first for me.
That's one that I hear in Danish.
Du er lille lort.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's a really important one
yeah.
to bring
reframe,
out
yeah.
and reframe. Just I guess having difficulty, terrible twos. There's a good amount of information linking the terrible twos to a changing gut bacteria, from their good gut bacteria that was present during breast milk and vaginal birth, to being the two things that build immune system. Running out and then them having to build up their own gut bacteria, and if the food is highly processed food, it creates the terrible twos rather than it being a natural thing.
So you're saying this is a normal thing in America?
Just,
yeah.
The home of the processed food.
Yeah, exactly. Sponsored by. Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on to E.
Yeah,
E. Okay. Was that empathy?
Yes,
yeah.
Good, well done.
I don't know what empathy is as a sociopath
that
I am, but tell me, what does that feel like?
You know, obviously it's a big thing, but generally I just... Apparently, Danes are also voted one of the most empathic countries in the world. I noticed very much how much more recognition there was for children's feelings.
Yeah.
Major difference. Even in the way, like, my husband would play with my son, or I'd see my family playing with our kids. Just much more focus on, you know, oh, hanasu, or, like, noticing other people's feelings, even if you're playing cars or playing dolls,
yeah.
there's always this sort of focus on feelings and putting words to feelings and seeing how other people feel. And also, I think this
mm-hmm.
ties to reframing, finding the good in others.
Mm.
So this example of, like, I would watch him playing cars and they would be like, he'd be like, oh, yeah, I mean, Hanusu. It was just something I'd notice, that it was a natural way of just pointing out in play to look for a nice thing. And
okay.
Sorry, what does the...
Oh, sorry. Like, isn't he sweet? Don't you hear that a lot? Like, they use that a lot here.
Yeah,
like,
they do.
Yeah. And I feel like there's just, I know there's a way bigger focus on not only teaching kids from very young how to read others. So there's a lot of programs in schools where they spend a lot more time working on showing different emotions, like pictures of you know, different emotions.
Yeah.
And the kids have to talk about it
and
describe it. There's a ton of examples of things that they do that I had never heard of. I certainly didn't grow up with these things, you know.
And be able to talk also about negative emotions, like anger or sadness, that they don't have to quickly be dismissed or converted to a positive emotion.
Yeah, that's the thing, having to move away from
exactly.
I mean, in my own life, I can tell you just negative emotions were dismissed.
Yeah.
And then, you know, now I could see as a parent, I'm like, wow, I have to feel comfortable in this space of allowing the negative emotion to be.
Right.
And if you don't grow up with that, it's really difficult.
Totally difficult. And that was a huge eye-opener for me. And this comes back to the authenticity.
Yeah.
Where it was like, oh my God, I have to talk about death and sadness. And I learned.
You've got to deal with it yourself
But what's interesting about this, I describe it as like, for me, I feel like Danes see emotions like colors on a color wheel. So blue is not better than red. Purple is not better than yellow. All colors and all emotions make up our world.
I think that's where kind of starting to bring mindfulness into the curriculum at an earlier age too will just help you see that this is non-judgmentally.
Right.
That these are my emotions. I understand them. So that's self-understanding. And to be able to process them.
Yes.
I don't know if you're a proponent of mindfulness.
Yeah,
in
yeah. And I know it's coming a lot here. Yeah. It's becoming very popular here.
Yeah.
And this, yes, comes back to this idea that all emotions are okay.
Yeah.
They're not good or bad. It's just an emotion. And I think in many other cultures, we have this thing that everything has to be happy all the time.
Right.
But that actually makes us sadder, I think, because we're not allowing the richness of what life is.
Yeah. And they're combining what the emotion is with an action, right? Let's say a child hits another one. That child was both angry and they hit a child. The emotion is fine, but the action is not fine. And you can talk about these as two separate instances. And the child's still fine.
Right, separating the child from the behavior.
Right,
yeah.
It's not a shit child.
Right.
Child in and of itself is fine. Child experienced angry, which is also fine, anger. But that action, obviously, we can't allow that and talk about it.
Right.
Why you can't.
Yeah.
Because you also have to be able to set boundaries.
Which is something else I feel they work on a lot here, a lot more than we do, is working on boundaries and helping kids learn how to say no to each other.
Right, without punishment.
And without punishment. But, I mean, even just, again, giving them the trust, giving them scenarios where they have to work it out themselves in the class, or class into two. Right?
Yeah.
No, class into team.
Yeah.
That's, like, revolutionary for people outside of Denmark. This idea that you have an hour a week where the main purpose is just to sort of discuss the class and work on anything that's happening. And the teacher's main role, as I understand it, is to just sort of be a mediator so that people feel heard.
That's basically correct.
And that's empathy, being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what I learned, I think the biggest lesson I learned in the empathy chapter was we're all born with empathy, but we actually have to learn to hook the wires up. And I didn't know that. So it is a skill. Empathy needs to be taught. Mm. And if you look at America,
Would you say it's untaught?
Yes.
So rather than you're born with it, you have it, it makes sense, and then you're taught that it, like, actually actively taught that it's wrong.
You mean in America?
And in the UK
in
as
the
well,
UK.
I should say.
I don't think anyone ever say empathy is wrong.
No, but emotions are wrong.
Oh, right.
And therefore, so if you're experiencing negative emotions, if you can't feel them and process them yourself, you're essentially taught that.
Well, you're taught, you have no right to be angry right now.
Yeah.
You don't need to be angry about this.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't need to be sad. Why are you sad?
Yeah.
You're dismissed.
Right. But it's also this idea of collaboration
instead
of competition.
You have to be careful with the reframing in that. So you're trying not to get someone to reframe an emotion once it's in, but reframe the experience. Is that what we're saying?
I'm not sure about reframing the experience, but just being able to more like acknowledge, right? Allow the feelings and acknowledge the feelings.
Sure.
And not quench them. You know, not say, don't cry, don't be sad. You're not mad. No, you're not. No, you're hungry. You are hungry. Yes, you are hungry.
Right.
You're not cold.
Yeah.
You know? But another element of this is this idea of collaboration versus competition, which is huge here. Yeah. This idea of we instead of me.
Yeah, it's huge in the Nordics. Yeah.
It's huge. And that in itself is also teaching empathy, because it's like also in class, you know, they do a lot of this collaborative learning where one kid teaches the other. That's learning empathy, because that child is having to really listen to the other child and understand how they feel and understand how they learn. And this is all sort of building those, connecting those wires, right? So it's not, I think where Americans maybe could get it wrong when they, because it's starting in America now, we're starting to get on board. But I feel like it becomes a little bit too much like empathy 101.
Right.
How can we be good at
it? Yeah, right.
Instead
five,
of
five
it,
steps
a lot of times it's just the activity that's teaching it. Right? Or the you know, the, these kinds of interactions that are teaching it.
Right, the environment. Yeah.
The environment. And but I feel it's super important. And it's the one thing people often ask me, you know, we can't recreate Denmark. You know, people get their back up because of the social system and stuff. And they have it so good in the social system. And, and I always say, I'm not trying to recreate Denmark. I'm just saying that clearly they're doing something right. If you look at the happiness levels, right?
Yep.
And we may not change the system now, but if we start teaching our children empathy, for example, they will grow up to change the system. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
If we start incorporating teaching our kids how to care, what do you say, pespuhinen?
Yeah, take care of
each
other.
They say that all the time in school, right?
Yeah,
take care of each other. You have to take care of each other.
Your neighbor, And that doesn't mean just your family or who's in your...
Exactly.
Church or club or group, but in general,
yes,
your common
person. And so they grew up, I think, to make the system a little more empathic.
Yep. Tell us about N.
N is no ultimatums.
No ultimatums.
Yes.
Okay.
And this was probably one of the birthplaces of the Danish parenting seed that was born, because it started with some discussions with my husband.
So either you do this or.
Yes, but it started, I think the awareness of it began, because I think this was even BC, before children, that we were having these, everything's like BC or AC, right?
Is your child Christ in that now?
It's like, when were you doing that? Oh, that was BC.
Yeah, okay.
And for some reason, we were talking about discipline.
Sure.
You know, and I was very sort of like, well, how are we going to discipline our children, right? Want to make sure we're on the same page. And he would be like, why are you so obsessed with discipline? You know, he's like, we'll work it out. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
I was like, no, but what are we going to do? What if, you know, what if this and this and that? So anyway, it turns out that, like, you know, the Danish model was very different from what I grew up with. So I grew up in a very authoritarian family.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we were spanked and yelling and the whole thing, which I thought was completely normal.
Yeah.
And they say something like 80 to 90%.
And you get reported to the municipality here.
Right. And, you know, in America, there's 19 states that still use corporal punishment in school.
I bet I can name, I bet I can name them just off the
top. I bet you can, too. I bet you can, too. Yeah. Hey,
this is a fun game.
Let's start with Mississippi.
Mississippi, Alabama.
I bet there's going to be a direct correlation between corporal punishment and who voted for Trump.
God, who knows?
Who would have?
What a random statistic that would be.
But anyway, so what it turns out was I found out that, that obviously in Denmark it's completely illegal. It's an unthinkable, you know, it's unthinkable.
Yeah.
Way of educating a child.
It's illegal in the UK.
There was a big switch. There was a big switch from the '60s on that was
right. Yeah, that it was made to be legal.
Yeah.
And so you have a much more authoritative approach versus authoritarian.
Right.
And I just noticed that there's a lot less use of ultimatums.
Yeah.
So there's a lot less power struggles. And I think again, if you look at the culture in America, we're a little bit like an I win culture. right? It's a competitive culture, right? Yeah. So this transfers over into parenting. There's often, I think, we go into power struggles unnecessarily with children immediately because I'm the parent,
right?
You know, here you have much flatter structure, and there's a lot more respect for children in general, right? Whether it's between teachers and kids or parents and kids. Yeah. And so,
and trust,
and just respect. And so, I just observed that there was a lot less immediate use of ultimatums, because the minute you go into an ultimatum, you go into a power struggle, right? And somebody has to lose.
And you see this one of the direct consequences as these children grow up. Some of the beauties of Nordic leadership is the distinction between being a leader and being a manager.
Yes.
And you know, we see leaders as the Nordic way of empowering your employees. Freedom with responsibility, whereas managing is control, and it's in these power structures, right? So the low power, you know, dynamic of Denmark enables for a leadership type culture.
Absolutely.
Whereas
it's much more democratic.
Much more democratic. You need less control.
Yeah.
But if you need like a military like structure, the Americans are fantastic at it for that reason, that they can create a disciplined structure with control. Because it requires it, but in this...
Right. But I mean, you know, it's this, in this case, for example, let's just use the spanking as an example, because this has been, I've realized it's been a, you know, I write about it a lot, and it's been, it can get very heated responses from all over the globe, you know, because it's still very prevalent in a lot of countries, right? It's now become illegal in a lot of countries, but I mean, also in the UK, I know a lot of parents that spank. I don't know if, I didn't know it was illegal.
It's illegal, but you know, there are lots of things that are illegal that still happen.
Okay.
But it's trying to be a deterrent, right? Just like the death penalty taken to its extreme, right? That we start with a spank and then it ultimately becomes the death penalty.
Legality isn't generally what changes things like that. It's unacceptability that changes it, right?
What does the data show? I mean, do we, in terms of the efficacy of...
Oh, my God, it's horrible. It's that half the chapter is dedicated to all the research I found.
Okay.
The long-term effects on spanking. It's horrible.
Yeah.
There's not one good thing that comes out of it. They did a huge, long-term study across a lot of cultures. And it's, you know, when you read it, you think, how are we still doing this?
That's insane.
And but I mean, I say it's insane, but I had the paradigm shift, because I probably would have done it.
Yeah.
If I hadn't known any different.
Sure, it was your default.
It was my default setting. And I think that's what, like, my message to a lot of parents. If you grow up and you're spanked and you don't know any different, even if you want to change, it's so in you. I think it becomes so much part of your DNA. Like, you know, it's almost normal. And that's why I think parents have to have empathy for themselves first. Go easy on themselves. And know that you want to make that change, right? And know that... there's a lot of countries that are thriving that do not hit their children, right?
Yeah.
It is an unnecessary form of education.
Right.
I
think the parents are, you know, my own perspective too, that if you have a child misbehaving, that you feel, oh, we're losing control here.
Right.
Right? I've lost control. Or if you're out in public and you're being judged by your peers, that I've lost control of the situation. And then you see in other cultures that then this real aggression comes in from parents to control the damage, right? Mm. And you're going to be punished when we get home.
Yeah.
For this social embarrassment or something. I don't know. But I guess parents too.
That's one of the tips I have in the section is like, don't worry about what other people think. You know, try not to get caught up in that judgment of if you feel that way, if you're around people that you feel are judging, what... your big lines of parenting are the most important. Your relationship to your child is the most important. It's not important what somebody else thinks about your parenting.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
But I think,
it's just easier inside a culture
where everybody feels that way. It's much harder in another culture.
Yeah.
I mean, God, you should hear the things I've heard about banking in other cultures. It's crazy. But I try never to come at it with judgment, because that's the first way people will be like, we'll shut you down.
Right.
But literally from this thing that I would have done it, I had a paradigm shift, you know?
Yeah.
So we've got no ultimatums.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody listening who is using ultimatums currently, they're currently going to be thinking, no ultimatums, then yes, what? What do you do if your child won't get ready, won't put their shoes on, isn't listening, and all you can think of is, I'm going to take away this afternoon's sweets if you don't?
Right.
Well, it's kind of like the four-day work week, right? If you're a boss, how do I make sure my employees will get their work done, right? Control.
I mean, it depends, obviously, on the child, and it depends on the situation.
Sure.
And I always say it's not a magic wand. It's not like you're going to use this sort of style of parenting and it's going to work every single time. Right?
Sure.
But it's kind of like the long game, and it's the big okay. lines of parenting. That's what I talk about. Like, you know, what is important to you? That you don't want to spank, that you don't want to yell, that you want to have respect for your child. And then it's, I find in the Danish culture, there's a lot of like team action going on. So there's some choices. And then it's also like if you, and reframing. So for example, if you want to get out the door in the morning, right, and your child is taking too long, right? Instead of it being like, if you don't get your shoes on right now, you're not going to watch TV the rest of the day, you know?
Oh, I just felt my heart rate. Thinking my 3-year-old.
Then maybe you say, first of all, one, try waking up a little bit earlier if mornings are a difficult time, so that you have more time to not lose, because right. of course we all lose surplus, and then that's when we're at risk, right?
Sure.
And instead of it for it to immediately be an ultimatum, you can say, come on, hurry up, let's get your shoes on so we can go listen to your favorite song in the car, yeah. or I'll race you to the car.
Incentivize.
Yeah.
Yeah, more like...
Reframe it.
Yeah. I'll get your bag, you get your shoes on, and then we'll do this
yeah.
together, right?
And trust the process. At some point.
Yes, and use empathy. Like, I can't tell you the times that I've had... been close to losing my mind with my son, and sometimes I'm like, okay, what am I doing? And sometimes I just go, I see you're mad, I see you're mad. And he goes, yes, I'm mad.
Yeah, exactly. I'll get out.
Okay, yeah. All right. We don't know why, but that okay. worked.
We're back.
It's amazing.
We're back. Yeah.
So it's just, I mean, it's a work in progress, and you have to be on board with your partner to do it, right?
Sure.
But okay. I can say... For sure, I don't think there's any greater feeling than when you conquer yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you have conquered yourself and parented in a better way, I mean, I think it's one of the most amazing feelings.
Sure.
You know, because it is the most important job in the world.
Now, what can these expat parents that are all around the world and also in Denmark that want to have a paradigm shift and try this out? Are there other places where they can, are there forums for this? Are there...
Yeah, there's we have a Facebook group, the Danish Way Facebook group,
okay,
for parents. Have it in several different languages as okay. well. We have 2 Instagram pages they can follow.
Okay.
Do
you get some dads on there too?
Tons of dads. Okay. I mean, that's the great thing. That's been the great thing about this parenting book is I think because it was called the Danish Way, I don't know if it was like... a little Viking-y.
You
want to
go the Viking way.
But it's weird. We had a seriously high percentage for parenting books of male readers. And I think it's because it's been a little more neutral.
Yeah.
You know? And even the first cover of the book was just very, like, black and white. That's like, good. I'm a man reading a parenting book.
That's what we want.
And it's A-okay.
Yeah. Good marketing. And wait, we're missing tea.
Oh, my gosh. But you know tea. This is Hygge.
Oh, is T. How is T. Hygge? It's not H.
Listen, I couldn't say parent, right?
Wait. So the T is silent?
Parent.
So it's TH.
So it's togetherness and Hygge.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Got
nice. Clever.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
You can't make the acronym fit.
Yeah, exactly.
Make the thing fit the acronym.
Okay. So togetherness and Hygge.
Yes, Hygge. So Hygge, obviously, I mean.
Well, we have Mike Viking on here.
Yeah, you've talked a lot about Hygge. And, I mean, I feel like I was studying Hygge for like 13 years with my Danish family, trying to understand what the heck was going on, because it was like Hygge.
This is not productive.
No, it was just a funny thing, right? Yeah, you know, like when you're observant and you're observing, and it's just like, my parents would ask me, my American parents, they would say, so, because he has a huge family, so like 17 people for these gatherings.
Okay.
And they would say, so there's no fighting, there's no drama, there's no... And I'm like, no, there's not. And my mom would think I was lying. You know, it's like, come on, you can't have that many people together for this long a time without...
That's what 6 bottles of schnapps at 10 in the morning will do. It'll boost moods.
maybe it's not, of course, it's not true in all cases. But what I observed was that... I felt that, you know, we talk about Hygge with candles and cozy blankets and all these things. But for me, Hygge is more of a psychological space. And it's a psychological space that Danes grow up with, right?
Yeah.
You grow up with Hygge, so they just do it naturally. Yeah. And I feel like the candles are almost more just like a symbol of it. Because I'm from Florida, we're not going to be lighting candles all over the place to create
pica. I think candles started in the war because Germans invaded and they had to be black at night. Everyone had to have their lights off. So as a symbol to say the Germans have gone, Nazis have gone, we're free, they put a candle in the window.
Is that correct?
That doesn't sound very jiggly.
So then candles is at night is a symbol of freedom.
Oh, wow.
I like that.
And
I like that.
Diminishing carbon dioxide in your house.
Okay.
LED. Well, you can do the LED. You can do the LED one.
Oxygen.
LED is semi. Okay,
the LED one.
Yeah.
So it was a psychological space, and it was a space that I felt that when you enter into it, you sort of, it's kind of a known thing that you take off. This is how I describe it. You enter into the psychological space, you take off your negativity, your work stress, your bragging, anything that's subtly divisive. Because I think hygge is about being in this space together.
Yeah.
Right? So I always, my catchphrase is, it's not mindfulness, it's weevilness.
Okay.
So it's being present in the moment together.
Together.
In the moment, right?
Okay.
So you're telling uplifting memories, you're playing a lot of games, you're doing things that connect you now.
And this is for you as a parent to establish with your children and your family to consciously create these moments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, it sounds simple, and for Danes it's like, what? Who got it? But of course, you know, who cares? Like, it's so ingrained.
Right.
But for other cultures, we have so many habits with our families where, like, maybe we're being negative about other family members, or we're gossiping, or somebody's bragging, or...
Yeah.
You know, or we're fighting about politics.
Yeah.
And it's all divisive. So we lose these moments to connect. And I think it's just because they're habits. They're cultural habits.
Yeah.
So we created this hygge oath for non-Danes to sort of read, print on their fridge.
Oh.
When you decide to make these hygge moments, everybody reads it and agrees, right? And so it's not all the time. You can complain any other time. We can talk about Trump any other time. For this dinner,
always be stuff to talk about that.
For this dinner, we are going to be in each other's presence and enjoy it. And here's the other things we can do: play games, tell. That's the wonderful thing.
Right.
Most families have great memories. We just don't talk about them.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that is extremely connecting.
I feel like if all the other P A R E N are in place, that it will mutually support that.
Have you got all of the letters?
Oh my gosh, I'll do a cheer afterwards.
Well, now we know what it means to be a parent in the full sense of the acronym. Excellent. I think it's a great time to take a break.
Okay.
And we'll come back with some quick fire questions to wrap up the podcast today.
Okay.
Studying for an executive MBA at Henley Business School in Denmark is an intense and rewarding experience. If you want to achieve the best possible outcomes in business and in life, Henley can give you the skills and knowledge you need through the Henley MBA. For more information, visit henley.dk.
Okay, we are back with our quickfire round. The questions will be quickfire. Your answers certainly don't need to be. Do you have any habits, routines, or rituals that you perform to keep yourself physically or mentally sharp?
Sometimes. It depends on the period. Sometimes I'm traveling a lot. But generally, I try to do some meditation a few days a week in the morning, generally. And I try to do a few days of physical activity.
On what type of physical activity?
I go to the gym. Yeah. So I do the treadmill and weights and... I had this fantastic period when I was writing my last book where I was up every morning at 5 doing like exercise and yoga and meditating, and I thought that was going to be my new...
This is the new routine.
Yeah.
But it was a phase.
It didn't
make the cut. So we'll see. It's I'm a little bit phasal. I think I don't have a kind of regular routine.
Yeah.
Cool.
Have you ever undergone any one experience or event that really changed you?
Gosh, where would I begin? No. one experience that really changed
me. Maybe it was a specific event where you think, wow, this just changed the way you thought about things.
Yeah, I would say too.
Your direction.
Definitely. Meeting my husband, the Great Dane, and that totally changed my life. And then having children. I think having children was definitely the most life-altering experience. It's the greatest rite of passage we go through, I think.
And I can see through your work, it changed the way you...
Totally changed my life.
Looked at...
Everything.
What's something weird about you? Maybe a strange behavior or hobby or something like that?
Gosh, I'm going to be really honest here.
Please.
Oh, good.
Oh, my goodness.
Authentic.
Wow. Authenticity. So a lot of people think I'm so put together, like, believe it or not. But actually, my nickname is Messy Jessie.
Okay.
So I'm actually really messy and disorganized. That's why, like, I have a phase where I'm 5:30, meditating, like, uber productive. And then I have a phase where I'm, you know, a little bit less. And sometimes if you look in my purse, it's like, it's a little scary in there.
Just like one room in your house, just everything gets thrown into.
Yeah.
I remember my brother is a naval officer and, you know, complete pristine condition of everything, you know, navally trained. And then he would be home and it was just a mess everywhere. Like, and I'm just like, how can you be both at the same time?
I don't know. I haven't worked it out. You know, my husband's also completely confused. But yeah, that would be my quirk, I guess.
Okay. Nice.
Cool.
Do you have a quote, value, or principle that helps guide you when you have to make tough decisions in life?
You know, they've developed over time, I would say. I don't have, like, a specific quote. I would say I've become a lot more boundaried. I've become better at saying no, which is good, and being authentic, being more direct in the kind of Danish
way. Do you find yourself using your parenting acronym for everything else?
Yes. Yes, yes. I mean, I always say this literally changed me as a person first and as a parent, right?
Sure.
So, like, whether it's reframing or especially, I would say, being able to be direct and be more honest and say no when I need to say no, that's been extremely helpful. And just being more, like, authentic and being much more aware of empathy.
Are those the three that you use the most?
I would say empathy, reframing, and... being boundaries.
Healthy boundaries.
Healthy boundaries.
Yeah.
So R, that could be your next book.
Are you thinking about it?
Okay. Send me the ideas.
I see your eyes lighting up for book ideas.
Can we get a C in that for confidence?
It just
clarity,
has to be a word.
And it
can
be
care.
We'll start with the word and the book will take care of itself.
What's your biggest motivator and biggest demotivator?
Gosh, my kids are a huge motivator. I would say they're my biggest motivator.
And biggest team motivator?
Probably just myself sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
I think we can be our worst enemy, right?
Yeah.
So I can sometimes get in my own way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like
negative thought patterns? Or?
Yeah, that's why reframing is a huge help for me. So yeah, I think I could be my biggest demotivator. I can be my worst enemy sometimes, but... my children definitely motivate me to want to be a better person and the best that I can be.
Cool.
Fantastic.
Hope that doesn't sound too cheesy.
Not at all. We don't get many Americans on, so.
did you
a little cheesy is okay.
Did you have a teacher or mentor when you were growing up that had a big influence on your life?
I'd say I had a few. Again, these are questions I don't usually think about. A great philosophy teacher. I guess my parents as well, in their own, you know. I learned that later, right? I mean, they were freaked out when I wrote a parenting book, as any parent would be.
It's a referendum.
You know, but in fact, they were wonderful mile markers for me in terms of giving me direction, so.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What book or books have you most gifted or been most influenced by?
I loved Blink.
Yeah.
By Malcolm Gladwell. Yeah, I think that's one of my all-time favorites.
Did you like about it?
I loved the idea of trusting your gut.
Yeah.
And, believing in your, you know, not always believing only in the scientific evidence, but also believing in thin slicing people.
Yeah, the intuition is right, and
yes.
the science will follow.
Yes, I mean obviously you have to have a mix, but I love the idea of thin slicing.
Yeah.
So Blink was a huge influence. And
what's thin slicing for?
It's when you take a situation and you can, and from one little slice of it,
yeah,
you can intuit a lot about it.
Okay,
we're actually worse with more data,
right,
than we are with
right.
With
so
rest.
Sometimes we go away from actually the truth by over-analyzing with data.
Right.
Yeah. So Blink really had a big effect on me, and then I really gifted the Danish way of parenting a lot.
Yeah.
That's a book I've given away a lot.
Signed.
In 26 different countries.
Not all of them I've given away, but yes.
Excellent. Well, I'm mindful of the time, and I think we will wrap up the podcast today with one final question,
okay,
which we actually ask to all of our guests, and that is, what do you think Denmark can teach the world? And I think I might have a hint in terms of a method. And what do you think Denmark can still learn? Obviously, you've lived in many countries.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe looking at it from both lenses.
Yeah. I mean, I think what Denmark can teach the world is to place a lot more importance on how we raise children. I would say really with more common sense, because I feel like that's very much the Danish way. It's common sense.
It's
I feel,
not that common.
I feel
common
we've gone...
Sense,
no,
right?
Right? But I feel we've gone so far away from that. And focusing more on not just academics, but what it means to be a person.
Yeah.
You know, the whole person.
Yeah.
So that's what I think Denmark can definitely teach the rest of the world. What can Denmark learn? Maybe... I mean, I think there are some great things to be taken from the American, whether it's in some of the ways we praise or...
Yeah, we didn't get into the role of manners, if that's something...
Yeah,
that's...
also manners. I don't think it's all bad to be sometimes individualistic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and whether it's Italy, the food culture, or I think every culture has some gem, and the better we all get at taking a little piece from another place, I think it could make everybody better.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's a great place to leave it.
Thank you.
Before we go,
yeah.
Where can our audience find you, find your books, find the Hygge thing to put on the fridge?
The Hygge Oath.
The Hygge Oath, excuse me.
Yes. Okay, so my website is jessicajoellealexander.com. My Instagram.
Something easy to type.
Something
in.
Really easy.
why
wasn't my
that?
Name
yeah,
just
yeah.
like Jess J?
It's just like Global DK Podcast.
Is that Alexander A-R or E-R?
E-R and Joelle, J-O-E-L-L-E.
We'll have it written.
Okay, you write it on. That's also my Instagram. We have the Danish Way Facebook page.
The Danish Way, okay,
mm-hmm.
on Facebook.
And website.
Is that where the groups were too? For
and the, that you can find that
people
on the,
that want to
yep,
drink
a,
the Kool-Aid and
a,
go.
There's a parenting group there,
yep.
supporting parenting group. And the Hygge Oath you can download from the websites.
Perfect.
And put on the fridge. That's very
Excellent.
Helpful. So everybody knows we don't talk about Trump for this dinner. Not Hygge.
That's number one on the Oath.
We've had... one podcast that he hasn't been mentioned in, and that was because he couldn't be. But he's featured
yeah,
in all
that's
of
right.
the others.
Wow. That's right.
Wow.
He clearly knows what he's doing with marketing to squeeze his way into our podcast.
We need a Hygge Oath, I think, at the door of the studio here.
I'll give you one. I should
right.
throw one. I'll
should,
give you one.
Okay.
Yeah.
But thank you very much.
Thank
it's
you.
It's been a true pleasure.
Yes, for me too. Very cool.
To our audience, don't forget to jump over to iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, review, subscribe, spread the word to help our podcast continue to grow. And until next week, see you on the GDP. Are you getting the most out of your time in Denmark? Pick up the printed copy of the English language newspaper Copenhagen Post today to access relevant news and event information guaranteed to enhance your working and family life.